This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
It is. Hi, everybody. It's 106. I'm Mike Moore and Carol Lawrence, my partner on Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, is away today and Monday as well. Nice four-day weekend. She'll return on Tuesday, which is Cinco de Mayo. Should be fun. So she is enjoying a wonderful weekend and hope that you will enjoy your weekend as well as we gear up for the Hippo de Mayo Taco Challenge, which is happening next Thursday. We'll be broadcasting live on the streets of Manchester. This is the biggest street fair of the year. So look for us starting at 6:30, going till about 8 o'clock, pretty much when things are peaking downtown for the Hippo de Mayo Taco Challenge. It looks like there's nearly 40 restaurants participating in a pretty condensed area, showing you how the restaurant scene has grown so nicely here in Manchester, in particular Elm Street and the streets that feed right into it. All right, it's 107, and we talked hamburgers. We're going to have some dessert now, but it's the most beautiful dessert you've probably ever seen or tasted. My guest is Charlotte Neuville. Her book is Stylish Cakes, The Extraordinary Confections of the Fashion Chef with Michael Coffendaffer. She is the fashion chef creating one-of-a-kind couture cakes. I hope I got all that right, including the pronunciation of your name, Charlotte.
You sure did, Mike. It's perfect.
Thank goodness, because I have a little French in me. This is a very French area, and if I can't say Neuville, I'm in big trouble. So welcome. Now, typically, we love to have our guests come in studio because we are strictly a two-hour daily food show, and the local people bring us food, but that isn't possible.
It is totally possible. I just need a little advance notice because I'm just in New York, and New Hampshire is one of my favorite states in the nation. So,
well, now don't go teasing me like that, Charlotte. Like you would make
I'm
me.
I'm not. I went to college really close to you, so
all right,
I know all about New Hampshire.
All right. Well, you got to tell me what college you're.
I was at Williams College.
Oh, you did. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, I didn't realize that. Maybe it's in your book somewhere, but I was so taken by the beautiful photography and the food styling and your story. That I didn't read every word. You know, I'm one of those that picks up the magazines for the pictures, but it definitely is very pleasing to the eye. But back when you were starting out as a child, your first foray into baking at age 8 was not, luckily, a predictor of your future in baking. What happened with that first buttermilk pound cake?
So funny that you should ask it because, of course, I remember it exactly. I was supposed to put 3 cups of flour in it, and instead of using the 1 cup measuring cup, I used the 2 cup measuring cup. So
Oops.
It ended up being very dry and crumbly. Not a buttermilk pound cake you would ever want to eat or even possibly salvage.
but it is a great story to tell, and you even have the little index card that's got all
yes,
the grease stains.
Yes, that was
stains.
My mom's recipe card.
You could see it went through probably like an Underwood typewriter or something because the lines are all crooked.
Yes,
but
isn't it wonderful?
It really is, and it really, I thought, was a nice touch to put
you.
Into the book.
I also share the exact recipe with the reader.
Yes. That was a little later in the book, as I recall. Thank you for that. It's funny because one of my first forays into making chili, which is hardly cake, and not nearly as precision geared, one of the parts of the recipe called for a clove of garlic. Well, I interpreted a clove to mean a head of garlic.
Oh, dear. I remember being confused between cloves and heads of garlic, when I was growing up.
Yes. Well, anyway, that
didn't no one have explains a... to you that stuff.
Well, here's the good news. You're right, but this was in Ohio, and it wiped out every vampire within 500 miles. So let's get back to your early childhood before we kind of sashay through how you got to be
sure.
the fashion chef. Your mom and dad weren't all that pleased that you wanted to study painting in college. And is that what you studied here in New Hampshire?
Actually, I studied, art and art history. Yeah, they really had, coming from Europe, and their college stints were interrupted by World War II. They were dreaming that I would become a doctor or an attorney or, a biochemist. And I took a major left-hand turn and announced to them I wanted to major in art when I was in an Ivy League school, and then on top of which, a couple of years later, I went to Parsons School of Design in New York. So that really sealed the deal. It was obvious I was headed for a design, you know, type of career.
You know, it's nice when parents will support you, you know, right from the start. My parents never said a thing to me about becoming a broadcaster, which since I was 12, I knew I wanted to do. And clearly, you had your sights set on the world of arts, whatever platform it would take. And as we look back now, and you and I are almost exactly the same age, I'd say it worked out for you.
Oh, totally. And P.S., my parents couldn't have been more proud. They were totally right there in the front row the whole way. So you
enjoyed a really successful career in fashion designing.
But
you were still baking whenever you had the chance, right?
Absolutely. My whole life, baking has occurred to me as relaxing. I really love to bake. What we do, though, here is so much more than just bake. I mean, my recipes are critical to me because I want the customer to experience cakes that are incredibly delicious. So we work on our recipes really carefully, and I test every single one of them. But it's really the decorating and if you have had a chance to look at the book, what we do with a cake that sets us apart from other designers.
Right, and I have some questions about that.
Sure.
Just a little further down my list here, but I wanted to acknowledge the fact that in 2005. Charlotte, you went to work for The Gap and had the chance to work with Bono of U2.
Yeah.
That was cool, huh?
It was. That is one of my best memories of my fashion career. In fact, of my life. I wasn't prepared for how intelligent he is, how sensitive, just funny, friendly. I was given total carte blanche to design the line along with a very small core group of people at The Gap that I handpicked, and it was an incredible experience for all of us, and thank God he loved it, and it went on to be a very financially successful line for The Gap,
and of course
it was the best part of it is that we were helping so many human beings on the other side of the planet. It really affected me very deeply.
Well, you left Gap in 2007, as we know.
I did.
In every industry, the world started changing, new thoughts, younger people, the technology. And you didn't stay in fashion. Well, not exactly. You enrolled in the French Culinary Institute.
Yeah, but I didn't do that right away. I had never taken a vacation in longer than 2 weeks. And I really needed to I wanted to just stop and take stock of my life and sense, you know, really, what did I want to do creatively next? And I kept going on fashion interviews, and it just wasn't clicking. And about 3 years later, 2 to 3 years later, it was really at the behest of my friends who pushed me to go on a tour of the French Culinary Institute because, you know, they kept seeing one crazy cake after another, and they said, you know, I really needed to consider it. And I knew the minute I took the tour that this was the place for me.
So what you did is you married your passion of fashion and baking, and you turned your house into a bake shop, including the bedroom, right?
I did. I moved out of my bedroom and set up a studio in there and did, of course, all of my baking out of my kitchen, which I swiftly started looking for a professional kitchen because actually in New York State, you're not allowed to cook out of your home. There's no license for that. And I was pretty nerdy by nature. I didn't want to break the law. So I soon thereafter moved into a wonderful professional kitchen just a couple blocks from my home.
Talking to Charlotte Neuville, her book is Stylish Cakes, just out, The Extraordinary Confections of the Fashion Chef, written with her business partner, Michael Coffendaffer. All right, so before long, some of your cakes that you made caught Barney's attention, the men's clothing store in New York. And that, of course, got you sort of exposed to the Oprah magazine. So when this happened, realizing the potential here, was it more exhilarating or terrifying, know that you might have to crank out hundreds of cakes?
No, it was more exhilarating. I mean, to me, Oprah is you know, she's a goddess. I thought it was, I was just incredibly flattered and honored. And the one thing I did know is that I didn't have the time or the wherewithal, you know, in terms of support staff, to figure out how to mail order. And that was part of the deal, that our cakes, they selected three cakes, which is a lot, and they wanted it to be able to reach all of our states. And, you know, if someone in Anchorage ordered it, they wanted it there, and they wanted it in perfect condition. And my one of my dearest, dearest friends, like my whole adult life, Michael Coffendaffer, happened to be available to do the project of figuring out the mail order piece of the business. And that was when we both remembered how much we loved to work together, and the rest is history. He became my business partner within the following year, and it couldn't be a better match. As you can read in the back of the book, the acknowledgement I give him, it's just a perfect union of two minds. He doesn't have a clue how to bake, and I don't have a clue how to do half the stuff he does. So it's perfect.
I'm still trying to picture these beautiful cakes that are artistically so perfect and so beautiful. How you ship them and how you do it in any volume. Are you still doing mail order cakes?
We still do mail order cakes, but we limit them to very. Or if you go on our website, you'll see that the cakes are only 4 to 5 inches in diameter. There are miniature cakes, which are very popular, that were actually popularized by when we ended up on the first page of the O List and the O Magazine. So that was a huge boost for our business. And we have not stopped since. We just love making the miniature cakes, and our customers love it. We do get requests. We sometimes go up to a 6-inch cake, but our cakes are made with, you know, they're pretty heavy in terms of weight, and it costs a lot of, you know, it's expensive to send them UPS to California. So people tend to either buy a miniature cake, or what we find more often is that they buy, you know, they're more local people in the tri-state area. Or I guess the furthest we've gone is Detroit, Rhode Island. We've done a couple of weddings in Rhode Island, Boston, where, you know, you can drive a cake there.
And that's what I'm picturing you doing, because we're just over the border here.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
In Manchester, and I'm just trying to figure out what kind of cake you're going to make when you come up and visit. I'm sure you're thinking about that right now.
Of course. And, you know, for those of your listeners that happen to be in the New York area, I just opened my first pâtisserie in Brooklyn, and it's been open for 4 weeks, and I'm doing savory as well as sweet.
Oh.
So it's really, and we sell the book there, and it's just wonderful. It's really, really, it's just so much fun, Mike. I can't tell you.
Charlotte Newville is our guest. Stylish Cakes, the extraordinary confections of the fashion chef. So a perfect example of a fashion chef creation, to my untrained eye, is the little black dress cakelets, reminiscent of Breakfast at Tiffany's. Those look so good and so beautiful.
They are incredibly yummy. In fact, we were commissioned by the First Lady to, at a luncheon, she served those for dessert.
Boy, that's an honor, huh, when you get tapped on the shoulder?
It was definitely an honor. But they're very, very yummy. They're dangerous.
I'm just going to kind of go through a couple others that I saw. And, you know, you seem like it's a very serious business and very precise and very, very artistic. But I like the fact that I could see your playful side with the pig wedding cake. What does a client say to you to guide you in these one-of-a-kind productions?
Oh, well, that client she's now ordered multiple cakes from us. And that was her first order. She was, it's a wonderful story. She was marrying her childhood sweetheart, and she wanted two wedding cakes. One wedding cake was going to be for all her grandchildren and nieces and nephews, which was the pig wedding cake, and the other one was a surprise for her husband-to-be, which was like the psychedelic cake in our book. So it's the pigs were, she loves pigs, and she thought it would be a hoot, which of course it was, to have pigs all over this cake. We hand sculpted each and every pig on there and hand painted them, and we had so much fun making that cake.
See, there's a cake that begs to have some bacon component in it somewhere. I don't know. That probably didn't happen, but
I'll have to tell her that's your input. She'll probably love it.
Yes, what man doesn't, or you know, her husband, whatever. So this Black Watch plaid birthday cake, very eclectic and very personal for a friend, right?
Yes, actually, I was hired by a group of Jeffrey Banks' friends, who he happens to be a very close friend of mine. But the a group of people got together to help pay for this cake because it takes an enormous amount of hours to do the plaid. Not to mention sculpt this black Scotty dog on the top, and that's his favorite dog. And he's written a book called Plaid that's been a best-selling book for Rizzoli. So it's and then those are his little evening slippers on little miniature evening slippers on there, and he loves hot dogs. So the dog is eating hot dogs.
See, that's what I love. I love the backstories, and you do pretty much give the backstories in these cakes. But it's fun to hear.
Yeah, I like to. Yeah, I want the reader to enjoy it.
But I got to be honest with you, Charlotte, I basically had to jump back and out of my skin when I opened the Here Comes the Fashion Spider pages.
That, I have to say,
creepy.
making them was really, really creepy because spiders kind of scare me, even though, you know, my name is Charlotte and there's Charlotte's Web. And, you know,
right. Yeah.
I always wanted that ending to be rewritten with another name. But anyway, it was tremendously popular at Halloween, and one of our clients wanted a number of them. So, you know, it was a great solution to doing it. But it was creepy turning off the lights and taking that photograph.
Oh, I mean, that really it does have impact, I have to tell you.
Well, especially her, you know, her the body was one of our gelatin bubbles, and we had a little LED light inside, and it was pulsating. So it was really alive looking.
Now you're really creeping me out because you can't see the pulsating.
You would love it, though.
Yeah, I know I would. Now, the to basically go 180 degrees from spiders, these sugar paste flowers are spectacular throughout, especially
Thank
with
you.
The detail of the Frick flower cake, complete
oh,
with,
yeah.
I assume, a sugar paste grasshopper.
Yes, that was an amazing, amazing project. It required about 400 flowers, and you know what we were. My intention was to make a sugar paste version of one of the Frick's Dutch masterpieces, Flemish masterpieces from the 1700s. I just kind of did it instinctually, you know, and it was an incredible project, very difficult, but really incredible. And it ended up being part of a woman's 60th birthday who was celebrating her birthday at the Frick. So it was a
cool,
all in all, a wonderful commission.
All right. So I've watched all the cake decorating shows, the Charm City Cake Guy, Duff Goldman, I think, out of Baltimore.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
and of course, across the river from you in Lee, New Jersey, is the Cake Boss. And once in a while on that show, they will show cakes dropping or, you know, falling over in the truck. Have you had any disasters that you can recall so far? I hope not.
I have had no delivery disasters, thank God.
Well, I hope I didn't jinx you with that, Charlotte.
No. I mean, we did have one that I'm trying to remember. A client wanted a giant oversized strawberry shortcake, and I actually told him that I didn't think it was a good idea because it was so hot outside, and it's whipped cream, you know, that goes out. And sure enough, by the time we got there, the whipped cream had pooled, completely collapsed. But the client was very gracious because he basically told me, you told me this would happen, and I told you I wanted it anyway, so it wasn't the disaster it could have been. And they all ate it anyway.
Of course. My final question. What would Da Vinci say if you threw a birthday party for him complete with a hand-painted Mona Lisa cake as you did?
You know, I'd have to definitely clear it with him first. That's for sure. I think I would get slapped with a lawsuit from him.
Yeah, that, of course, was a different time, but it's a beautiful reproduction. I'm thinking of all these little local bakeries.
We hand-painted that, Mike, onto the fondant.
I know. So who was it, you or was it somebody else's hand?
It was one of my artists. I work with several artists that actually don't know how to bake at all, but are just brilliant, brilliant artists and love the challenges that come across our threshold, and all of us have multiple talents. You know, it's not a huge team, so sure. We all pitch together, and each cake is touched by many hands.
Well, it sounds like it's fun. You're doing exactly what you were born to do, and the fact that it kind of came together this quickly is very impressive because, as we know, there's a lot of 30-year overnight successes in this world, and I don't think you quite fit that mold.
Well, you know, I really, what I want the reader hopefully to get from the introduction and from listening to my story, I just want people to follow their passion and to really and know that it can happen at any age, and you know, I'd rather skid to the finish than have any regrets. So
Charlotte Newville, the book is beautiful to look at with the recipes and the backstories, a few of which you heard today. Stylish Cakes, The Extraordinary Confections of the Fashion Chef, written with her partner, Michael Coffendaffer. She is the fashion chef, one of a kind, couture cakes. And I'm so glad that we had a chance to talk with you today.
Me too, Mike. You were a wonderful interviewer. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Charlotte. Hope to cross paths with you again sometime.
I'm sure we will.
Be well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. Fun conversation with a great artist and an interesting way that she finally got to where she wanted to do when she grew up. I'm Mike Moore, and Carol Lawrence is away, and we come back on the other side. We'll be talking with Carol Phillips after we kind of gained all this weight talking about cake and hamburgers earlier. We're going to find ways to be healthy with healthy lifestyle. She is the wellness coach, and we'll be talking with Carol Phillips joining us next here on the Pulse WTPL 107.7.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Words to live by, everything in moderation. The voice of Carol Phillips. I think your mic was open as we come back to our final half hour of Food for Thought on WTPL Pulse 107.7, and I am Mike Morin, normally here with Carol Lawrence, who is away for a nice four-day weekend, and I think she is in Florida, and from what I can see, she will be bringing back some of those warm temperatures when she returns early next week. I think temperatures will be into the 70s and 80s as early as even Sunday. So is spring finally here? I don't want to jinx it, but it looks like that may be the case. Carol Phillips is in the studio with me here in the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street. She has a book called 52 Simple Ways to Health. She is the Common Sense Health Coach and a national health and wellness expert. Her business is Health Design, and the website is healthdesignnh.com. She speaks to a lot of people, and Carol, thank you for speaking to us today.
Thank you for having me. Hello, listeners.
So, you know, you started out essentially, you know, we're going back a little earlier in your career as a personal certified personal trainer, where you were essentially helping one person at a time, and I think you got to a point where you felt like you wanted to perhaps spread the good health news and information to more than just one person at a time, and that kind of led you to where you are today.
Right. I love the psychology piece of motivating people to make healthier choices. And when I was working as a certified personal trainer, I was working with one person at a time who was already motivated. And I really wanted to be working with multiple people at once who were really having a hard time getting off the couch. And society has slowly taught us that being healthy has to be difficult and boring and expensive. And that is so far from the truth. We need to get people back to making the small changes that lead to big health positives in their lives, and then making it fun. We've taken the fun out of being healthy, and we need to get back to choosing things for exercise that are fun and eating foods that are fun for us. And, you know, if we're eating healthy most of the time, that's huge.
Very true about the enjoying ourselves while we're out. I mean, it should be a little bit of pain, but, you know, I guess no pain, no gain. I don't know if that kind of goes against what you're teaching, but I think that there has to be some point where you are feeling like you're doing more than you have before, so you're actually making progress.
Right, absolutely. But we need to change our thinking, too. So when we get to that fork in the road where we're trying to decide whether to make the healthy or unhealthy decision, we need to not see the unhealthy decision as something, you know, that we deserve that's going to be positive, whereas we can, you know, it doesn't have to be black or white. We can, you know, make healthy choices most of the time, you know, have... You're talking about cakes earlier. Have your cake and eat it too, as long as it's in moderation. So it doesn't have to be painful as long as we have that mindset of, you know what, I'm going to do my best and then I'm going to give myself positive feedback afterwards for however amount that I did do. And that's going to motivate ourselves to go forward and keep making those healthy decisions, even if they are small.
So you're a certified personal trainer. Just dealing with one client at a time. Talk about how the state of New Hampshire kind of created something that helped put you in front of more faces.
Right. Well, I was working for the state of New Hampshire at the time, and in 2006, then Governor Lynch issued an executive order because he recognized the value of worksite wellness for the employees and their families. So he issued an executive order saying that he wanted each agency to assign a wellness coordinator to promote health and wellness in the workplace. And the agency that I was working at, the commissioner offered me the position, and that's when I really fell in love with health coaching and all of health and wellness and putting seminars together for the employees and making it fun and interesting and doable for them. And so I went back to school for health education, and I haven't looked back.
Are you also, or were you a certified, a registered nurse?
No.
No, never.
I started in, I taught a million fitness classes, and then I went to school for exercise science, became a certified personal trainer, and was doing all the fitness end, and then I expanded into health and wellness.
When I do interviews with people for my book, 50 Shades of Radio, sometimes they'll pull something out that I know I wrote a couple years ago, so I'm going to put you on the spot here, so you may not remember all the information here, but you say that wellness is more than eating right and getting enough sleep. Can you even remember or talk about the seven dimensions of health? It's at page Roman numeral 14.
Right. Yeah. So the seven dimensions of wellness basically teaches people that every area of your life contributes to your wellness, and it affects your health, either negatively or positively. So, you know, it could be anything from your finances are connected to your health, because when people stress over their finances all day long, it's going to have a negative impact on their health. Likewise, you know, your social life contributes to your health. If you have healthy social relationships, then your health is going to be more positive. If you have, you know, negative relationships, that's going to be stressful and it's going to negatively affect your health. So basically every aspect of your life comes back to your health one way or the other.
Yeah, that whole social aspect is so obvious, yet I think it's often overlooked by people. Oh, yeah, I get enough sleep, I exercise, but basically people hate me. Yeah, so that's pretty counterproductive based on what you're saying.
Right, and everything's connected. So, for example, if you had somebody who was in an unhealthy relationship, they're not going to sleep well at night, more than likely. When we don't sleep well at night, we don't get into a deep sleep in which we do a lot of our healing, which is a direct link to health. But then there are a large variety of indirect links. For example, if you're not sleeping well at night, you're going to be less likely to exercise the next day. You're going to be less likely to make healthy food choices. You're going to be mentally distracted.
Wow, it's a domino effect, huh?
Absolutely a domino effect.
Sure.
And likewise with the small positive changes, that's a domino effect. So you get a variety of benefits from one small change that's healthy and positive.
I love the title of chapter 48, and I want to ask you to tell me what it is. The title is Put Yourself on Your Calendar First. And I'm afraid most of the women that I know don't do that. And I don't know if it's a gender thing or it's a mother thing or it's a nurturing thing, but I think more women need to do that.
Absolutely. We don't put ourselves first most of the time. Women aren't good at saying no, which no is not always a negative thing. And if you look at people's calendars, they are filled with things that they need to either be doing for work or for family or for other people and not for themselves. So I tell people, put yourself on your calendar first for your exercise, for your downtime, for your time with your friends, and you'll notice a huge change in your life.
So could I open up your iPhone calendar right now and see those me times in there?
I know. And you know what? I'm not perfect either. I have times where I have to pull back and say, okay, wait a minute. I need to slow this train down.
Sure. Well, thank you for saying yes to today's interview. Appreciate that. So I know that you do a lot of work at a lot of demos or consulting at workplaces. What types of things can you offer to companies or businesses that want you to come in and help people start thinking about being healthier?
Well, I've lectured on a wide variety of health topics, but one of my favorite is teaching people that all of health is connected and that those small changes are hugely important, especially changing your mindset first. So usually people get hyper-focused. They either think it's the food or it's the lack of exercise that's affecting their health negatively. And usually what people need to do is they need to stop and take a step back and start analyzing themselves and their thinking, because the thoughts drive the behaviors. So if we keep giving ourselves negative messages, or if we keep giving ourselves permission to always take the unhealthy choice every time we get to that fork in the road, then that's not going to, you know, add up to a great amount of health.
What does it finally take for somebody to make that leap from giving yourself permission to make unhealthy choices? Does it finally take a doctor that says, well, you'll be dead in a year if you don't change this and that? Or, because it just seems like people don't do it on their own if they don't have somebody else telling them that they better change fast.
Well, it's interesting because everybody's different, and that works for some people, and for some people it doesn't. You know, there are people who smoke and, you know, they have heart attacks and they still don't change their habits. Or you could have somebody else who they just get so frustrated with carrying the extra weight or having the high blood pressure, being told that they need to be put on meds, that they just, you know, usually it's just one day where something clicks and they say, okay, I've had enough. I was just reading a story of a woman who lives in Trumbull, Connecticut, who was over 400 pounds, and she recently lost over 200 pounds. And she was in a national magazine. They did an article on her. And they asked her, you know, what happened? And she said, you know, I was on my way home from work one day, and I just said to myself, I have had enough. And I pulled into the gym and signed up for a membership.
Isn't that interesting?
And she said, I just started, you know, exercising. I started slowly, let it build up. I started making healthier food choices. And the thoughts drive the behaviors. So usually it's whenever you've had enough and you say you're going to start making the changes.
As a wellness expert and a health educator, how do you know what buttons to push with people to make that thing happen like it clicked in her head?
Right. Well, there's a lot of psychology involved. So when I'm working one-on-one with clients, I, of course, ask them, you know, to tell me about their lives and all the different areas of health. But also getting into their heads a little bit to see what those mental roadblocks are and having them figure out what works for them and what doesn't. So the drill sergeant mentality also doesn't work when you're health coaching, because if I'm pushing somebody to change, then when they stop working with me, they're just going to come to a screeching halt or they're going to go backward. Whereas if I'm walking with them and teaching them how to take care of themselves with the thoughts and the behaviors, then they can carry that forward when they're done working with me.
Got it. Carol Phillips is our guest. Her website is healthdesignnh.com. Her book, 52 Simple Ways to Health, Common Sense Health Coach, National Health and Wellness Expert, does lots of radio shows and appearances around the country talking exactly about what we're doing, and she is a local here in New Hampshire. Where can we get the book?
It is currently on Amazon as a paperback and an ebook. It's also on barnesandnoble.com. And locally, it's available at Zen Zen Yoga in Bedford, Just Naturals in Bedford, The Bookseller in Nashua, and Gibson's Bookstore in Concord.
The book is a quick read because you get to the point pretty much. There's not a whole lot of what I would call filler in there. You get right to the stuff you need to know. And I think people appreciate that.
Well, it's designed to be an easy read, and it's also designed to reach the least fit employees in corporate America. So employers can contact me through the website if they want to get bulk discounts.
Which is healthdesignnh.com. We're not done with Carol Phillips. Oh, no. We have to talk a little bit about food and happiness and yo-yo dieting and more when we come back. You're listening to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. Carol not here today. I'm Mike Moore. And 145 The Pulse, WTPL 107.7. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is Food for Thought on The Pulse 107.7, presented by Express Jewelry Center in Concord, 44 South Main Street, also New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, in our beautiful green room, which is compliments of Fallon's, the official decorator of the green room. Everything is sponsored here, Carol Phillips. Don't you love the nice leather sofas? And
beautiful.
We need to set up, you know, the microphones out there, but then again, we might fall asleep because it's so comfortable.
You could have a live audience here. It's a great setting. Downtown Manchester.
We could. And maybe if we charge them a couple bucks ahead, you know, well, there's 30 or 40 people out there watching right
there
now.
You go.
And they're watching for free. We need to turn this into more of a moneymaker. Carol Phillips, her book is 52 Simple Ways to Health. She is a common sense health coach and does a lot of speaking nationally. And this is a food show, so we touched on it a little bit earlier, Carol. Food changes that you can make, you know, as you say, small steps at a time, nothing drastic right away. For instance, drink lots of water. Don't drink milk out of the container. I mean, and what other things could you help us with that won't be a shock to the system yet going in the right direction?
Well, one thing that people need to hear is to eliminate the word diet. Okay, what's the first three letters of diet spell?
Oh,
right.
Yep.
So we don't want to go there. You know, we need to eat to live. We don't need to be hungry. We're not meant to be hungry, and that's not the right way to lose weight. So what I tell people is just find new foods that are healthy, that you love, and start implementing those into your diet. So slowly crowd out the unhealthy foods. And people say to me, well, won't you gain weight that way? Well, when you start eating healthier foods, they tend to provide a lot of nutrition and be lower in calories. But calories aren't a bad thing either, because that's where we get our energy. So start introducing new foods, start crowding out the unhealthy ones, and use that extra energy to exercise, so you'll be burning more calories. So you never have to go hungry while you're trying to lose weight or eat healthier.
You take a complete approach in all aspects of your life to greater health, as opposed to just very specific areas. And I think happiness is one of those, how do we define happiness? And we know when we're happy. One of the things about, I guess, feeling a little bit lighter is laughter. Laugh, because that's one of the things that I know from many, many years of doing morning radio. I would get in at 4 o'clock in the morning and we would all kind of be working together. And until I had that first really good deep down gut laugh, you know, I didn't really feel like I was all that great. And then that laugh just totally released a lot of endorphins or something. And I think anytime you have a chance to do that, it's really helpful.
Right. It's not only good for the soul, it's good for the mind and good for the body. And it's very alkalizing for the body. So mm-hmm. People who follow pH, our body works off a pH system, much like a swimming pool. So you need to have a healthy balance. Well, the American diet and the American lifestyle is very acidic. So people are becoming unhealthy because of too much acid in
no
their
more
system.
Margaritas for me. You're not telling me that here.
Everything in moderation. So
you need
to offset the margarita with a lot of laughter.
Oh. So I need to go to a comedy show and have 4 or 5 margaritas.
Right.
I get it.
So we were talking about the domino effect. So
yes.
With laughter, it reduces your blood pressure. It gets your mind off of your stress and your problems, and the benefits go on and on. So something as, you know, as healthy as laughter, it has that alkalizing effect on the body, which is great.
We hear a lot about yo-yo dieting. Can you maybe explain that and why it really is very counterproductive?
Well, the biggest problem is when we go on a quote-unquote diet, or we try to make too many large changes at once, the brain automatically says, these are temporary. When is this going to end?
Okay.
Whereas when we make small changes, we implement them and we find things that work for us, the brain thinks of them as permanent. Okay. So we don't want to be yo-yo dieting. We don't want to be making huge changes and then we get to our goal and then we slowly go back to our old habits, well, then we're going to gain the weight back. We're going to stop exercising. And it's not healthy for the body, obviously, mentally or physically, to yo-yo diet. It's too much of a stress. So the smaller changes implemented over maybe a longer period of time, much more healthy way to go.
If I'm trying to lose weight, should I throw my scale out or just weigh myself once a week? Or what's the plan with that?
What I tell people is it depends if it works for you or not. Don't weigh yourself too often because the body has so many fluctuations with fluid levels. And if it's a positive thing for you to weigh yourself maybe once a week or once a month and it motivates you to keep making healthy choices, go for it. But for most people, they get very depressed, you know, when the numbers don't say what they want them to say. Mm-hmm. So what I tell people is your waist doesn't lie. So if you measure your waist, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, the same time of day, the same way, then you can really see those results. Because when people start eating healthier and they start exercising, they're building muscle. So the scale might tell them the same number, but they're actually making great progress because they're burning the unhealthy fat and they're building healthy muscle.
That's exactly what happened to my partner, Carol. She's been on an 8-week program so far. Of exercise and proper eating and everything else, and her weight remained the same from, you know, 2 months ago. But it was with the body fat composition, everything else, a lot of it was muscle, which is exactly what you want it to be. Well, the music is playing in the background, and that's their not-so-subtle way to tell me our segment is over. Carol, thank you for coming in today. And I know you're on with Ken Kale from time to time.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Carol Phillips, 52 Simple Ways to Health. You can get the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other select finer bookstores in town. Common Sense Health Coach, as you could hear today, national health and wellness expert, Carol Phillips, and she'll be back on The Pulse, no doubt, sometime soon. Thank you for listening. Enjoy your weekend. We're back to celebrate, well, Cinco de Mayo on Monday to get that pH going in my body with some margaritas and stuff. Happy weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday. Food for thought on The Pulse.